Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? This is 411 Teen, a space dedicated to examining the realities shaping today's world. Each week, we explore the issues of influencing teens, families, educators, and other interested folk, asking the hard questions and encouraging deeper understanding, because informed conversations lead to stronger communities. The heat is rising, and so are our electric bills. We take on the power behind the power, examining why energy costs in Florida are climbing and who's really paying the price. From global conflict to local consequences, from corporate profits to consumer pressure, is Florida investing in the future or stuck in the past? With special guests, David Jenkins, president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, we talk power, profits, and the price you pay. The intersection of global conflict, domestic energy policy, and consumer impact, focusing on Florida's unique, vulnerable position. Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, founded in 1999, is a national profit that promotes national resource conservation and environment stewardship. The group advocates for market-based climate solutions, public land protection, and sensible energy policies. David, welcome to 411 Teen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
When conflict erupts thousands of miles away, why does it show up in a Florida family's monthly bill? Can you share that with us?
Yes, well, a lot of that is because the utilities in Florida rely very heavily on natural gas for their electricity generation. So natural gas, just like oil, and you know, you've seen the price of the gas pump, they're global commodities. In other words, regardless of how much we produce here, since they're shipped around the globe, they're affected by any kind of supply disruption anywhere. So like when Russia invaded Ukraine, we saw natural gas prices spike because it took some supply off the market. And the same thing with the Strait of Hormuz being closed, we're seeing prices go up due to that. And so when we rely on a globally traded commodity for our energy, that's going to be affected by things that are completely outside our control. Whereas domestic energy sources, which you know include solar, wind, geothermal, hydroelectric, and even nuclear, those sources are not affected by those global events. Therefore, they're more predictable, and the price can be set at a certain level for a longer period of time without it fluctuating a lot.
Well, let me ask you, though, before you go on, if global markets dictate prices, who decides how much the the cost is passed directly to consumers? Who decides how much of that cost is passed on to the consumers?
Well, that's a little more complicated because what we were just talking about was fuel.
Right, right.
So the fuel price is one thing, and that's what we were talking about.
That's why I wanted to interrupt and just kind of, as you mentioned the global markets, I was like, wait a minute, I got to ask the question. Yeah. So that's why.
So then there's other things, you know, when you're talking about electricity, for example, you're talking about the cost of the grid, you know, the power lines and all that stuff. You're talking about the other costs related to power generation, which are, if you have these coal or gas plants, they're expensive to operate because they're mechanical and you have pieces wear out, you have a lot of maintenance and upkeep on them. And then, of course, you have the utility themselves and their commitment to their shareholders in terms of turning a profit. And one of the shocking things that just came out recently, especially related to FP&L, Florida Power and Light, is that a group called Energy Policy Institute did a deep dive into how much of your electric bill goes purely to profits. In other words, not for fuel, mm-hmm. not for grid, building the grid, not for any of those, not for service to you, but just for profit for shareholders. And a lot of those shareholders are not even in the state of Florida, right? So on average in the U.S., 12.8% of someone's power bill goes purely to shareholder profit. Okay. But that's different in Florida. The FPL profit margin for 2025, 27.44%, the highest in the nation. So in other words, almost a third of your power bill is being shipped off to shareholders for profit. Has nothing to do with what you're getting from the power company, how much energy you're using. Doesn't matter. It's a third of it is shipped off to make other people rich. And it's basically a transfer of wealth. It's taking money from people in Florida and just sending it to fat cats at other places that just happen to invest in FPNL or their parent company, NextEra Energy.
Oh, okay. So let me just kind of shift a little bit. So to be clear, are you saying that the Florida consumers are essentially absorbing the international risk with no buffer? There's no buffer there? I mean, at what point does energy independence become more than a political talking point? Do I make sense? You know what I mean?
Well, see, the utility industry in this country for a long time is run by basically monopolies. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're an FPL service area, for example, then you don't have a choice. You can't go to Duke or TECO or anybody else. You're stuck with FPNL. Okay. So they get that guaranteed customer base. Therefore, they're not subject to free market competition. Mm. So they don't have to worry about someone coming in and luring their customers away with lower prices. So the only people who can dictate what those prices are or put some guardrails on what FPNL charges is the Public Service Commission. And that's okay. a state agency that's appointed by the governor. The folks that sit on it are nominated by the legislature, and then the governor picks from those people and makes appointments. And so anytime a utility wants to raise your electricity rates, they put forth a rate case to that Public Service Commission and say, here's what we want to do. And here lately, what we're seeing is that Public Service Commission, instead of being a consumer watchdog to make sure they don't, you know, fleece consumers, they become a utility lapdog. Whereas they just rubber stamp whatever the utility wants them to do.
Okay, I got it. Well, now, why is Florida the sun-soaked state? Why is it so dependent on fossil fuels?
Well,
I mean,
usually,
are we locked into outdated infrastructure? I mean, if we're dependent on these fossil fuels and we're the sun-soaked state, why are we there?
A lot of it is the decisions that the utilities made back when they thought natural gas was really cheap. So before there was liquefied natural gas and we could export it to other countries, we had to use all the natural gas we produced here. And that made for crazy low natural gas prices. So the utilities went all in on the natural gas, building natural gas plants. Well, that situation has changed a lot.
Right.
But when they build those natural gas plants, they say, well, we want 30 or 40 or 50 years out of this plant before we retire it. And so when the situation changes over the course of that 30, 40, 50 years, the utility is very reluctant to change. And if the Public Service Commission is not willing to make them change, they're going to drag every last ounce of life out of those plants, even if it costs their customers a whole bunch more than it would if they switched.
Okay, I got you. So, you know, we are locked into outdated infrastructure.
Yeah, but get this. So Florida gets about 11% of its energy from solar. Okay. Mm-hmm. And solar happens to be the cheapest source of electricity in most states, not in Seattle, Washington or something, but in most states with a lot of sun. And while Florida's only getting a measly 11% of its energy from solar, Texas, which is a red state, by the way, is getting more than 30% of its energy from solar and wind. And that's not even the biggest state. Oklahoma, which is another oil state, red state, gets 42% of its electricity from renewables. And Iowa leads the nation with wind and solar accounting for 61% of the state's energy. And then you have South Dakota and New Mexico are not far behind at like 59%. So here you have the Sunshine State that is way, way, way behind on using the power of the sun to give people cheap electricity.
I follow you. So why? I mean, because what I hear, you know, what I hear you saying, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just learning like everybody else. When a utility earns over 20% in returns, that's great, but that all that money goes to their investors. And so
it's great for the investors.
Yeah, it's great for the investors, but the public.
It's not great for the public, for the consumer.
Right, yeah, the consumer continues to have to pay the cost. And then what I don't understand, I mean, I hear you, but if these plants are decades old, what is the long term cost of maintaining them versus replacing them?
Yeah, so for example,
that would be my question.
There's some old coal plants, for example, whereas the cost of maintenance and on those, the cost of coal is pretty cheap, but the cost of maintenance on those plants mean that electricity from that plant costs $85 a megawatt hour.
Okay.
If you compare that with brand new solar and battery storage, you could get that same electricity for $25 a megawatt hour.
Hold your thoughts. So this is one of those points where we have to take a break. Just hold it, because we're going to come right back, and I'm going to let you continue. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this is an education for all of us here in Florida. We welcome David Jenkins. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me, he's now in Northern Virginia, is David Jenkins. He is the president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. And this is truly an education, David. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad that you're here. I had to interrupt you. You were explaining it, the whole cost situation. Would you continue?
Yeah, so as I was saying, with coal plants that are really old, we're talking about $85 a megawatt hour, sometimes higher, sometimes over 100, whereas solar comes in around $25 a megawatt hour with solar plus storage, and those battery storage that, you know, allows it to be used at nighttime and so forth. Natural gas, sort of a similar situation. It's like $65-$70 a megawatt hour. So those two sources of energy, regardless of how much the fuel costs, just to operate and maintain those old plants costs a lot of money.
Right.
So what makes sense is transitioning away from those to solar, which is more predictable. Like, for example, when a new solar plant opens up, they do something called a power purchase agreement. And that means that they sign an agreement with the utility for 20 years and they guarantee that price. So like if the price of solar energy is $25 a megawatt hour, you're signing a 20-year contract with the utility saying it's going to be $25 a megawatt hour for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas with natural gas and coal, that prices fluctuating all over the place. And in addition to Florida, just because of the utilities, you know, not taking advantage of solar the way they should, we get into these politicians that, for some reason, are anti-solar. For example, I was listening the other day, and I heard the gubernatorial candidate, Paul Renner, and he was talking about the, you know, oh, we need to get the cost under control with the electricity bills and stuff. And I thought, oh, this could be good. But then he like went and took a sharp turn. And instead of all of the above, which is the way the Republicans used to frame our energy, you know, we want everything. We want all the energy sources, all the above. He started talking about sort of a harebrained energy cancel culture, where he's anti-solar. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. So during that interview with Drew Steele on Florida's Voice, Renner trotted out these really old myths about the reliability of solar energy that haven't been true in more than a decade. You know, talking about how, oh, they don't generate power if it's cloudy or if the sun doesn't shine. Well, that's what the battery backups are for. Or the fact that he doesn't realize that the grid is a smarter grid where they can choose to pull power from a solar plant at one end of the state if the other end of the state is cloudy, and then vice versa. So you don't have that reliability issue that he was talking mm-hmm. about. And then he took a little ride down the rabbit hole of ignorance, I guess. And instead of not just with the outdated reliability claims, he then implied that we should reject solar energy because too many solar panels and the batteries used for storage are made in China. So let me get this straight. So, you know, it's a good thing the United States didn't take the Renner approach in the 1970s and decided that since Japan was flooding the market with quality cars and trucks, we should just stop driving. The patriotic American response to such competition, contrary to what Renner suggests, is not surrender, but it's to meet that challenge in mm-hmm. the market space and beat the competition. And so instead of him saying, oh, no, solar panels are made in China, we should hate solar, he should be saying, oh, no, too many solar panels are being made from China. We need to make our own production here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like his logic is, and then we think this is, you know, because if people on the left are in favor of renewable energy, then he's like having this knee-jerk reaction that, oh, well, I can't be for it because they're for it. But, you know, wouldn't that be kind of like if you and I decided to boycott all vegetables because there was some liberal vegetarian that happened to like them too?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't abandon things that are useful and that you need. Al Gore claimed he invented the internet, but we haven't like gone cold turkey and stopped using the internet just because he claimed he invented it. So what you do is you do what makes logical sense. And that's a conservative thing to do, because conservative, and if you know, notice the word conserve is in conservation and conservative, they come from the same root word. Being conservative means being pragmatic and doing what is smart. And going down these ideological rabbit holes that end up costing a bunch of people money and making no sense, it's just stupid. And we need to, you know, voters need to stop putting up with it and calling it out when, you know, when they see it.
But they don't know. I mean, you know, I don't think that they know all the details. That's why you're here, to kind of share with us what's going on, okay? I have a couple questions that I wrote and you were talking, and I just want to go back and ask you. When does profit cross the line into price gouging? I mean, well, isn't that kind of what's going on?
It's definitely there.
Is there a ceiling on profit when the product, we're talking about a product that is essential to daily life.
Exactly. And so back, you said go back 6-7 years ago, Mm-hmm. Utility profit margin, which return on equity is what it's called, ROE. Utility profit margin was between 6% and 8%, which is pretty much like it is with other businesses. You know, you sell right. something, you make about 6-8% profit on the sale. The rest is cost for different costs along the way. And they made a profit with 6-8% return on equity. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now you fast forward to now, and most all of them are above 12%. And FP&L is at 27.44%. So this is not the amount of profit they need to get by. This is not a reasonable amount of profit. This is gouging the public and taking advantage of it. And that's why we see today, you see so much of our country's wealth is in the hands of a very few billionaires. And that's because there's this concentrated effort to rig the system to make the wealthy people more wealthy and the people that are middle class or lower income or whatever just take more and more money out of them. And, you know, it's eventually going to get to the point where people rebel. And I think they already are to a degree. I mean, some of the politics in this country, how, you know, extreme it is on one side or the other, the people are just like they're fed up and they just don't know who to blame. Mm-hmm. Well, the people to blame are the people that have rigged the system to get rich. And right. you need politicians, whether they're Republican or Democrat or independent, that will stand up and say,
call them out.
Okay, this inequity there's enough. And, you know, this happened once in the past in our country's history. Do you remember, well, you don't remember personally, but Theodore Roosevelt, he had this issue with the robber barons and child labor and all this stuff. And he was a conservative and he believed yeah. in capitalism. But he realized that if capitalism goes off the rails and gets too greedy, that there's a backlash and that benefits socialism. So he didn't want to see the socialism that was gaining popularity in Europe come over to the United States. So he decided the best thing to do is to put guardrails on capitalism. So he broke up the robber barons and he ended child labor and he took all these reforms to make sure that they didn't rig the system and hurt the public. Mm-hmm. And that was a conservative thing to do then, and that's a conservative thing to do now.
Well, the conservatives are in power. Why aren't we doing it? I'm thinking, as you say this, I'm listening to you and I'm following you.
Well, but yes, the political
we're maintaining the status quo.
Yeah, the political right is in power.
Right.
Whether they're conservative or not, it's a different story.
Okay.
Look at the budget deficit, for example. You know, we're approaching $40 trillion, right?
We're going to be bankrupt.
Do you mm-hmm. see any effort to rein in spending? Mm-mm. I mean, you're talking about billion-dollar ballrooms and arches. And I mean, it's like we're spending money like it's growing on trees.
I think we're going to be bankrupt. We just can't keep spending all this money.
There's nothing conservative about it. Mm-mm. These people put a conservative label on themselves, yeah. but they're not conservatives. They just want to do what they need to do to try to stay in power and to enrich their powerful, rich friends. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're doing. And, you know, if you go back and you pull conservative, go back to Reagan. Reagan would be appalled at this kind of stuff. John McCain would be appalled at this kind of stuff. Bob Dole would be appalled at this kind of stuff. And yet here we are, so many people just blindly going along with it instead of, you know, saying enough's enough. If you remember, you know, a lot of this grievance politics that seems to be letting this stuff happen, you know, we went through a Great Depression back in the 40s, 30s and 40s, and that Great Depression, we had food lines, we had people going to other states to find work. It was, you know, crazy. And those people weren't aggrieved. They weren't like voting in radical people to think that they had to tear everything down. They just buckled up, pulled themselves up by the bootstraps, and plowed through it and got to the other side. And when I, my daughter plays lacrosse, and we used to go to these tournaments when she was little. Mm-hmm. And there was this T-shirt I really loved. It said, "Suck it up, Buttercup." And that's what I want to say to a lot of these folks that are, you know, they have two TVs, they have two cars, they have no problem putting food on the table, yet somehow they think that they have to tear the system down. Well, if you're going to tear something down, make sure you're aiming at the right thing. And the right thing is these people who's taking advantage of everybody.
Mm. Well, you talked previously in the earlier section about the Public Service Commission. Now, I know how they get there. I know who they are. So I know who the Public Service Commission is. But who are they serving? The public or the providers?
Well, that's the thing. I think they're pretty much serving the utility because they have their eye on a nice, cushy utility job when they get through being on the Public Service Commission. And the other thing is, these utilities, they have tons of lobbyists, right?
Right.
Those lobbyists are down in front of the staff of the PSC and the commissioners probably every day, if not, you know, definitely every week, but probably every day, bending their ear, trying to convince them that what they want is the right thing. And so they do that all the time. So they've been working these people. And then when a rate case comes up and we see what's being proposed, and the public is outraged, and we go to a public hearing and we submit comments. Those people have already been worked for months, and they already made up their mind. And the public has no impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, what transparency do consumers actually have in how things are run? Not just rates alone, but I guess the consumers really don't have. There is no transparency.
Well, I mean, you know, nonprofits, like I was talking about the Energy Policy Institute, they did research and they figured out how much of a percentage of your bill was going to profit. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the utility is not going to publicize that.
No.
So we find out, and it's our job to amplify that and make sure everybody else knows. Because, you know, if you don't know about it and you don't, like, get fed up and do things to change it. Like, for example, if the PSC is not doing its job, then what you need from your elected official, like your state house member or your state senator, is a commitment to only put people on the PSC, only nominate people for the PSC that put consumers first.
Okay.
And if they're not willing to do that, no matter what other issues you agree with them on, say no, just vote them out. I mean, you've got to care about it that much or nothing's going to change. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the thing is they're banking. Politicians bank on the fact that people care about a lot of different issues. So if you're pro-gun or pro-life or whatever the case may be, they're banking that issue will trump these other things that affect your pocketbook. And, you know, we can't let that happen. You know, we've got to look at what's best for us, and we can't let people just basically, you know, transfer our wealth into their pockets. It's fine to pay the appropriate price for a service.
Right.
We want to, you know, obviously electricity is not free, but when you go from like an 8% profit margin where you're doing just fine, to suddenly a 27.44% profit margin on people, you know, percentage of people's bill. Obviously, that's not just to provide service. That's not just to harden our infrastructure or keep the grid stable or anything. No, that money is going to shareholders that have nothing to do with Florida, have nothing to do with your giving you electricity or anything.
So.
Why should you let that happen? No, I'm just saying, why should you let that happen?
Well, and again, I'm trying to follow you, and I think I am. Mm-hmm. So I was going to say, what would it take to make clean energy not just viable, but dominant. And I hear you saying the legislators, we need to address who's in office and the positions they take and the votes that they issue.
Yeah. And from a policy perspective, there's a very easy solution if people would do it. So, like, remember I told you that these power plants, they have a life expectancy of 30 or 40, 50 years, whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are getting near the end of their life expectancy.
Right. Yeah.
So if the legislature would pass a 100% clean energy standard, in other words, require 100% of the electricity to be clean by, say, 2050 or 2060 or 2070, mm-hmm. not now, mm-hmm. down okay. then what would happen is the utilities, when these plants retire, they would say, okay, I can't build another gas plant because then when we get to 2050, I'm going to have to close this thing down. Yeah. I'm going to have a stranded right. asset. So instead of building that, I'm going to build the solar plant with the battery storage. And then I know when 2050 or 2060 come around, I can keep this thing running because it meets that standard. So you're not forcing things to shut down now, which could increase electricity cost. You're just directing what happens once these retire in terms of replacing them. And the great thing about solar and wind and some of these other sources is that the fuel part is free.
Yeah. Hold it right there. We're going to take another break, but we'll come back and continue the conversation. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm talking with David Jenkins. This is Dr. Liz Holyfield.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this is a very powerful conversation. Many thanks to David Jenkins. David, would you like to continue what you were saying?
Sure. So we were talking about that when you're talking about solar energy, mm-hmm. And the same is true with wind, the fuel is free. And it's not affected by anything happening anywhere else in the world. I mean, that sun's coming mm-hmm. down from the sky. It doesn't have to go through the Strait of Hormuz or anything. It's coming straight here. So not only do you get cheap energy, okay, but you get secure energy and price stability, where, as you mm-hmm. know, that price is going to be the same year after year after year. And when we're planning our budgets and stuff, don't we want to know that we're going to spend the same, you know, roughly the same next year on electricity right. as we do this year? That would help a lot. Now, obviously, it will go up some if it's hotter or colder or whatever. You have those factors that come into play. But having that rate to be stable is something that we need. We need to be able to plan our budgets. And so with solar, nobody can cut the supply off. Nobody can do anything to us. And it's made in Florida. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come by pipeline from Utah or Wyoming or Mississippi or anywhere. It is produced here. The same with wind. In some states, geothermal is something that they take advantage of or hydropower. But when you look at those sources that have where the energy, the fuel is free, then you just have the initial upfront cost of putting the factory or the plant together or the solar array or whatever you're doing. And then that cost is then divided over the lifetime of that project. So you just have stable cost. You don't have additional costs from fuel. The alternative is, okay, we stay hooked to, you know, natural gas and coal and heating fuel or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. And these things are all affected by things far outside our control. And when we have that, we're vulnerable. Our energy security is vulnerable. The amount of money we have to to for groceries and all that stuff, that's all vulnerable because we can't control it. Well, but if we have energy sources where the fuel is free and we know what the costs are and they're stable, then that helps all of us. And it also helps preventing these utilities from getting away with this price gouging because they can't say, oh, the price of gas went up, so we're going to have to charge you extra, or we know what the costs are. And so we can hold them accountable even better.
My question to you is, you know, we've talked about, you know, these big, large power companies. What about the co-ops? Will you talk some about the co-ops? Are co-ops offering a better model, or are they facing basically the same pressures?
They do, because co-ops are nonprofits in the way they function. They do offer some benefits. The problem we have with that is that a lot of them end up buying their power from the monopoly utilities. They don't produce it. They don't have their own power plants a lot of times. Some of them do. But a lot of times, even if they have a power plant that they run, they're still supplementing that with power from FPNL or Duke or TECO or whoever you know, is near them. So it helps because they're trying to look out for their customers better than the monopoly utilities are with the out-of-state shareholders. But they're sort of at the mercy of the monopolies in a similar way to the way we are.
Okay. So that's, they really are not a real answer.
Yeah,
they're still getting their, you know, source, their energy source from the big companies who are doing what they
If you could have a bunch of them band together with, and each of them had some energy sources and they were able to put it all together and provide most of their customers' energy without having to go to the big monopolies, then, yeah, that's a potential model. But the other thing that we haven't talked about, but we really should, you know, dispersed solar, for example, you know, rooftop solar. Back when... can't remember which hurricane it was, several years ago, that hit the Gulf Coast. The Babcock Ranch, which is actually run by FPNL, but it's a completely solar community where all the houses have solar panels, everything is underground, you know, it's very well hardened. They didn't lose power during that, where every other community around them did, but the ones that were relying 100% on solar never lost power. And so when you're living in Florida, that's something people should really start thinking about is, okay, we can have decentralized energy production, you know, with communities having their own solar panels, houses having their own solar panels, business having their own solar panels. And that dispersed energy means that, you know, you're not vulnerable to a power line coming down, you know, in the wind or flooding, shorting out a relay station or something like that. So, you know, it behooves Floridians to do more of that kind of stuff to help produce their own electricity. And also, when you're producing your own electricity, you're not paying the utilities for it, or at least
the utilities are
now trying to increase service fees so that... they can get solar users as well and say, well, even if you use no energy from us, we want you to pay us $40 a month. That's happening in some states.
So go right ahead.
But you know, getting less reliant on the grid and less reliant on these big monopoly utilities is a smart thing to do. I was on the radio one time with this guy. He was about as far right as you could get. He believed that the UN had troops in Cuba and was going to invade Florida. He was way out there. But you know what? He lives completely off the grid in Arizona and powers his house 100% by solar energy. And he was like, you know, I don't have to worry about these big, crazy utilities gouging me for money. I'm making my own electricity. I'm doing fine. and he was all in on solar. So you can't say that solar is a something from the left, political left, or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's something that everyone should take advantage of, especially if you live in something called the Sunshine State.
Well, so what I hear you saying is that communities really do have power in shaping their energy future. They just have to do it. If it's banding together, I mean, whatever they need to do. But the power really is there, but we just aren't taking advantage of it. Am I thinking in the right way? I mean,
yes.
You're educating me too. Okay, so as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, based on everything that you have said up to this point, I understand. And even though we often think, we don't have any control, we're out, you know, we have to do what the powers that be say. Communities do have some power in shaping their energy. Yeah. They have to do it.
You gotta decide that you're gonna stop being the victims of this greed and corruption, and you're going to take a little bit of this into your own hands and work together. And you know, this shouldn't be a red or blue or right or left thing. I always say that, you know, there is no red or blue or right or left energy. Energy is just energy. It's just energy. It's all energy.
Right.
It doesn't have any political stripes. It's just what makes sense at any given point in time depends on the price and the market and all these things. And you got to be able to look at that and you know, evaluate it on an honest basis without anything, any thought of politics or ideology or crazy rabbit holes that people go down or conspiracy theories or anything like that.
Right.
It's just energy. And energy produced in-state is better than energy produced out-of-state. Energy produced in the United States is better than energy produced in other countries. So we want energy security. We want cleaner energy. We want cheaper energy. And we want to not be taken advantage of by monopoly utilities who, you know, they get a free ride. They're not even subject to competition in the free market.
Yeah, that's true. So local communities can have a meaningful influence, and they aren't really bound to these larger market forces. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you saying. I mean, through all of this is what's coming through to me, okay? Now, what are the barriers? What are the barriers to renewables?
Okay.
I mean—
Okay, so as soon as people start doing this— in a big way, you're going to have to defend against the utilities lobbying the legislature to try to make it harder for you to do it. Whether they require you to pay them a fee to be connected to the grid, whether they start trying to influence the insurance industry related to solar panels on rooftops, they're going to try everything that they can. You know why? Because they want you to buy power from them. And anything you do that reduces the amount of power you buy from them, they're going to bend heaven and earth to try to interfere with. And so that's why not only do you have to be willing to take some of this stuff in your own hands from that aspect, you have to take some of it in your own hands from the standpoint of being very insistent with your elected officials and saying, hey, you're going to look out for my interest. Not the big fat utility interest. You're going to look out for my interest, or you're not going to get my vote. Pure and simple. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk about stewardship. And for those who are listening, would you just share, what does that mean? How does it translate into concrete policy or utility behavior in these last few minutes? I just wanted to get that clear.
Stewardship is essentially taking care of what you have, taking care of what you've been given. And so all of our natural resources are things that we've been given. You know, we didn't make them. They were here. You know, whether it's our trees, our mountains, our air, our water, even the oil and the coal and all that stuff, those things were given to us. And if we use them irresponsibly, then that's not stewardship. If mm-hmm. if we waste energy, if we say, oh, well, we shouldn't put controls on methane emissions, which is basically natural gas, and prevent it from being wasted and just sort of shot up into the air because people don't want to, like, use best practices and tighten up their pipelines and stuff like that. We're saying we're in favor of waste, and waste is not stewardship. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to our air quality and things like that, you know, we want to breathe clean air. We want to, we want things to help us stay healthy. I remember back, this is dating me, but, I was active in the McCain-Palin campaign, and one thing she said that always annoyed me is she said, well, God wouldn't have put that oil in the ground if he didn't want us to burn it. And I was like, well, that's a bit presumptive because, first of all, the way oil is made is it's taking excess carbon, the trees and stuff and life takes excess carbon out of the atmosphere and then over time stores it underground. So maybe he designed it that way for a reason. So mm-hmm. are we supposed to say, well, okay, he developed a system that took the carbon out of the air and put it underground. And so our message from that is, oh, we should dig it up and burn it and put it back up in the air. I mean, you got to think about this stuff a little bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You certainly do. I mean, we're at the end of our conversation, and we've talked about the markets and the infrastructure and the policy. But for the average household, this comes down to one thing, at least where I'm sitting, affordability. And I want to ask you this one closing question. What is the one decision right now that could lower costs for consumers? And in 2 minutes, you got to give it to me. Why hasn't it been made?
Well, I think the biggest thing in the short term mm-hmm. is to get off of this rate hike merry-go-round.
Mm. Okay.
Every single year, it seems like these utilities are up before the Public Service Commission yep. saying, we need another rate increase. Yep. We need another, even though they made tons of profit last year, somehow they still need another rate
mm-hmm.
increase.
Mm-hmm. So, yep, exactly.
So, you know, last session in Florida, there were some utility, I mean, some PSC accountability legislation that was supposed to reform some of the way the Public Service Commission operates. And it's really hard to get people behind that kind of effort because probably half the people don't even know what the Public Service Commission is. And they bank on that sort of anonymous type thing where it's just a nondescript state agency.
Yeah,
you know.
That works to their advantage.
Exactly. But the thing is they should be labeled rate hikes are us because they're the only, you can't get a rate hike. The utility cannot get a rate hike unless they approve it.
Mm.
So you've got to put pressure on your elected officials to put pressure on the PSC to just stop the rate hikes. That's the first step. I mean, it's bad enough, you know, the 27.44% for FPNL, that's bad enough, but you certainly don't want it to keep getting worse.
That's true. That's true. Well, I don't know. How do you motivate folks to do this?
Well, hopefully every time they look at their power bill, they'll be motivated.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. And look, any closing words to the wise that you want to say in the last?
Well, I would just encourage people, if they get a chance, to go to our website, conservativestewards.org, and you'll see all the issues we work on. And we work on not just energy and issues like that, but we work on pollution issues. We work on public lands, protecting our parks. Like, remember the state park crazy thing that happened in Florida mm-hmm. A couple years ago? We were on that and trying to get that derailed. We don't need more golf courses in our state parks. And protecting wildlife. We work on endangered species stuff. But we do it all from a conservative genuinely conservative perspective. And so much what you hear out there in politics these days on people from the right, it's not conservative. It's extreme. It's radical. It's knee-jerk. It's not conservative.
Okay.
So think about what conservatism really is, and it comes from the same root word as conservation.
All right. Well, we thank you. And when energy and electricity becomes a burden instead of a basic service, it forces hard choices in homes across the state. And while global conflict might spark a fire, it's local decisions that determine hot. If it burns here, that's what's going on. So the real question isn't just why prices are rising, it's who's responsible for keeping them that way. Many thanks to David Jenkins, President of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, and much appreciation to my listening audience for your time and ear. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Stay informed, stay encouraged, stay engaged, and get the 411 on 411 Team. 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at WFSU.org.